I see that Vicky Arteaga has just met someone, and you know, and that you know, Beata's, you know, presenting on SynGap in Poland, and I mean, I see these things. It just, it's incredible to me. I see that Stoke is you know, celebrating SynGap Awareness Day. You know, the fact that that adoption and care and concern is just is awesome. You know, and I just if I think about where we were 5 years ago in terms of attention versus where we are now, you know, yes, certainly. If I look forward 5 years, I hope we're curing our kids. You know, that's the goal here. Mm-hmm. But the progress is so significant.
Hello and welcome to SynGap One Stories, hosted by me, Ashley Fry. Every couple of weeks, I spread information and awareness about a rare disease that affects my son Nathan. It's called SynGap One. I chat with parents, siblings, caregivers, and others about the challenges and successes of their journey with someone impacted by SynGap One. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me again. I say this every single episode, and I really do mean it every time. You are really going to enjoy my conversation today with the one and only Ashley Evans. She and Mike founded SynGap Research Fund 5 years ago in June 2018. Just think about that for a moment. Two parents of a young SynGapian had the foresight, determination, and skills to begin SRF. And then over the next 5 years, to be the guiding force that has led it to be the successful organization that we are today. I am continually grateful that they had the capacity to put an organization like SRF in place for me and others who came after us. Ashley, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You may not know this, Ashley, but you are somewhat of a unicorn in SRF land. Everybody finds you very mysterious and brilliant and really want to get to know you better. We hear from Mike constantly, but everybody wants to know more about you. So let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't love talking about myself, which is maybe probably part of the reason that people don't know me as well. But I do, I have been so heartened by the relationships that I have been able to build with folks at SRF. And Ashley, I remember at the first annual Karen Lieb Gala when we met, and we met the other Ashley, and we had three Ashleys affiliated with SynGap in one room together, which was a wonderful time. And, you know, I've really, really valued getting to know the community to the extent that I can and have been able to. As you know, as a SynGap mom, there's not a lot of time in life for much beyond work and direct family. And I'm also, my husband's the extrovert in the family, to be sure. So that may explain some of the mystery, but certainly I think of the SynGap community as a super important part of my life, and so grateful for it.
Yeah. Tell us, what do you do professionally?
I'm an investor. I invest in software businesses. It's something I've been doing for about 17 years. So basically my whole career, which is, you know, it's very rewarding work. It's demanding work, but it's very rewarding work in that I get to work with entrepreneurs and, you know, help them grow their businesses to the next phase. It has given me, SRF has given me an interesting perspective on my work, and my work gives me an interesting perspective on SRF in the sense that it has been a bit of an entrepreneurial venture over the last 5 years. And so I'm seeing it from the other side, from that perspective.
What do you do for fun? How do you relax?
Great question. when do I relax? As I said, I'm an introverted person. So for me, the best ways of connecting with people are usually one-on-one. So I love to go for a walk with a friend. Sometimes I actually schedule a phone call with a virtual friend and go for a walk with that person at the same time in different places. A lot of the people who I'm closest to are far away now. But I love being in nature. I used to run a lot and be, you know, very physically ambitious, not so much anymore. But I do love getting out in nature and being with the people I really care about.
Yeah. How has Tony's diagnosis affected your career?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. I'd say there's two aspects to it. I mean, pretty obvious, as many SYNGAP SRF folk know, it's impacted Mike's career much more directly and fundamentally. And I have to say, I'm so, so grateful for that. You know, back when we founded SRF, we started trying to do it while we were both still working, and that was really unsustainable. Right. And he, you know, we jointly made the decision, but he made the sacrifice to leave his career while I continued my career. And that has been, that has been a huge, it was a huge sacrifice, and but also created the opportunity to build SRF to where it is today. So that's something I am deeply and fundamentally grateful for. I'd say it also, the thing about, and this is not so much SRF, but I think raising a special needs child just gives me and us, honestly, I think, such a different perspective on, you know, on what matters, right? I have a colleague who's upset and feels like life's not fair. I kind of have to look him in the eye and think about my own kid. And I don't say it most of the time, but it's like, you know, let's think about what's not fair in life. You know, if I myself get upset about something, you know, not going my way, it's sort of, you know, yes. And I have the privilege of having a brain that works and not having seizures and all these things. Right. And, you know, fuck up, you know? I think that it just brings, brings a sort of perspective and balance to the way that I operate in the world outside of my home, that, you know, that is honestly helpful, right? In the workplace, because getting, going through all those, you know, roller coasters of emotions, you know, work disasters, you know, it's just not really productive anyway. So,
Yeah. It makes you think about what's really important. You know, are we really going to have a 30-minute conversation about this menial thing? That's not going to make that much of a difference. I mean, it's important, but is it really worth worrying over in this context? And sometimes I think to myself, buddy, get a real problem, right? But then, as you said, you have to put it into perspective. Some people are very blessed and lucky to not have to deal with half of the things that we deal with in their personal lives or in their professional lives. And sometimes it's just like, okay, but this might be the biggest thing that they have to deal with all year. This is a big deal for them. And I have to appreciate that also.
Absolutely. That empathy is important.
Tell us how you and Mike met. And now that you've been together for a good number of years, how do you remain strong in your relationship with each other living with SYNGAP?
Yeah, sure. So we met about 13 years ago. He was a yoga teacher and I was his student. That is how. You must know. But there's some importance in that, you know, they say you don't practice, I think he used to say it, you don't practice yoga to do the strong poses and, you know, get the strong body. It's to anticipate the things that might happen, right? And be prepared for the times that, you know, that you're not going to be able to do all the things and to bring a calm mind and all those sorts of things. Now, I will not claim to be a perfect yogi at all, but there's a sort of interesting irony or, you know, something in the fact that we met in that context and have had a number of really challenging experiences over the last 12 years. So the end of June is an important time for our family, a very important time for our family. We founded SRF at the end of June. I can talk more about that. At June 2018, I also gave birth to my second child in the end of June 2018. in June, at the end of June 2015. My mother passed away unexpectedly. And at the end of June 2012 is the year that we got married.
So, this
week has all of these massive, important, difficult, powerful memories to it. So I'm glad to be talking to you today from that perspective.
Oh, well, we're gonna keep it very light and encouraging then, because nobody needs to dive into the hardest parts of our lives, especially not in a podcast like this, where we are bringing each other up and connecting. Yeah. Tell me, I do want to go into SRF and founding it and just its journey as an organization over the past 5 years. But so far, what do you think is the most valuable thing you've learned along the way before we get real specific?
I think it's Margaret Mead who says, you know, you never doubt what a group of dedicated individuals can do to impact the world. When we founded SRF, I really hoped that that was true, but I didn't know if it was going to be. And I have been overwhelmed by the impact that SRF has had. And it has had that impact because of the dedication and the commitment of a small but growing group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Okay. So let's start from the beginning. It's June 2018. You and Mike saw a need. You decided to found SRF. What was the most challenging thing at that first decision point? What was your biggest hurdle? What were you afraid of? Or what was the hugest unknown that you couldn't see past yet?
Yeah, let me maybe describe how we started it, like why we started
it.
It was, Tony had been diagnosed. He was actually diagnosed on Rare Disease Day 2018. So that's the end of February. And we had immediately sort of sprung into action. We both have this sort of bias for action. And we talked to everyone who would talk to us. We networked. We sort of got lucky. A lot of people were very kind and spent time with us. We didn't know anything. Neither of us had a degree in, you know, had really done any genetics since we were 14 years old. So we'd had a lot of conversations. We talked to a lot of people. And a few things became clear. Like, one thing that became clear is there was a pathway to cure this disease. It wasn't a pipe dream. It wasn't, you know, something a few, you know, fringe, strange people were dreaming up. But in fact, SMA had had treatments developed, you know, all the things we all know the history. There was a pathway to cure the disease. The second thing that became clear was there were not people who were going to be dedicated to curing the disease, who cared enough, who had the resources and the capability and the organization and the alignment to get it done, because it was going to take money and coordination and a lot, all these things, right? And so we looked at it, and I remember I was quite pregnant with my second son, and so I had this horrible back pain. The only way I could alleviate the back pain was going for these really long walks. So I made Mike walk with me whenever we could get a babysitter. So we're walking along, and you've been to Half Moon Bay with us. So we're walking along that coastline in Half Moon Bay, just kind of, okay, this is what this person said. This is what that person said. How could we actually make a difference here? You know, in all the fear and worry and what have you. And we came down to sort of three core thoughts, which is, one, people aren't working together, right? There's no collaboration. It's the combination of biotechs don't want to share their IP and academics don't want to talk about stuff before they're published. There was a lack of transparency. And through no fault of the folks who were involved, there was an urgency, right? Everyone's got a lot of other problems. SYNGAP isn't other people's problem. It's our problem, but it's not their problem. And so we said, you know, there's just no collaboration. There's no transparency. There's no urgency. And then we said, well, what if we brought that mantra, you know, that objective to this problem? Because it is a problem that can be solved. And if we bring those principles here and do everything we can to try to solve it, maybe we can make a difference. And Mike talks a lot about sort of the open tent, right? Idea of, and it was like, because there were a lot of people, there were within, even at that point in time, Aaron Harding was here. Peter Halliburton hadn't quite been diagnosed yet, but he was early. You know, we were spending time with JR. We're spending time with Virginie. There were people who were already diagnosed who were trying to address the problem. What if we bring these people together and say, you know, let's just work on it with this in this spirit. And over time, there will be other people, right? There was you. Right. I don't know if Nathan was even born yet, right?
Actually, he was, but not diagnosed,
right? And so, you know, and so just let's, what if we bring this, that spirit to solving this problem, and we open the tent and we ask everyone who's got that spirit to join us, I wonder what we could do. And then, you know, and it was sort of this endless walk we're taking. And then it's sort of like the sort of conversation and our thinking evolved to, well, if we could do something, then we've got to, right? How could we not? And so that was really how it started. And I think we incorporated SRF, you know, a few days, you know, a few week, couple weeks later, had to go through some processes to do that. And then, yeah, got going that summer.
Yeah. Has it met your expectations?
The progress that the team has made has far exceeded any expectations I would have had.
Oh, wow. What about the science? Do you think the science, I am always, it's never fast enough. It's never going to be soon enough. It's always going to be too late. But how do you feel about the science? Has the pace met your expectations?
Yeah. So I would say I fully recognize, right? My last degree in progress in genetics was when I was 14 years old, right? So, so I didn't know what to expect in terms of the pace of change. Yes, there have been projects that we've funded where I was disappointed by the pace of progress within the individual projects. There have been things that, you know, there have been things that I would have hoped would yield results. But again, part of science is finding out the truth. Science is about finding out the truth. It's you know, so sometimes the results are not what you would like. But the amount of interest that we have in curing SYNGAP now versus where we were 5 years ago blows my mind. And particularly that interest and activity has been maintained in the context of a huge decrease in the amount of funding around biotechs, you know, versus where we were at least 3 years ago. You know, it's a little bit disappointing. Where we are right now is a bit disappointing versus where we were 2 years ago, but that is a macro issue, not a micro issue in my view. It's not a SYNGAP issue. It's a much broader issue. So that's where I'd. So, I mean, honestly, I go on LinkedIn. You know, I don't use most social media, but I do use LinkedIn, and I see that Vicky Arteaga has just met someone, and you know, and that you know, Beata's, you know, presenting on SYNGAP in Poland, and I mean, I see these things. It's incredible to me. I see that Stoke is celebrating SYNGAP Awareness Day. I mean, SYNGAP Awareness Day was something, I mean, I think like Virginie made it up 6 or 7 years ago.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, you know, it's very important. It is a very important day. But, you know, the fact that adoption and care and concern is just, is awesome. You know, and I just, if I think about where we were 5 years ago in terms of attention versus where we are now, you know, yes, certainly. If I look forward 5 years, I hope we're I hope we're curing our kids. You know, that's the goal here. Mm-hmm. But the progress is so significant.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Mike said it in one of his recent podcasts, is like, this organization is a movement. And even if one person needs to step back for a little while and deal with personal things, the organization continues on and it is still thriving and it is still accomplishing all of what our mission is together. And I think that's exactly right. I mean, we're kind of at the point now where what you started and the vision that you had for it has successfully maintained itself and grown, and it is now not necessarily a self-propelling beast, but essentially it is. And I think for all of us, like, we're the only ones who care, right? Who's going to do it if we don't? No one. So, congratulations on that. You've created a monster.
Well, no, I mean, and I fully recognize it's not self-propelling, right? Because every person who works on SynGap, or not every person, but the people who work on SynGap who aren't affected by SynGap personally are incredible people, and I'm so grateful for them.
Yes.
You know, and yes, the vast majority of people who are involved with SRF are still affected, at least in their extended family to some extent. But each of those people is balancing a really heavy load already. And so the mm-hmm. fact that you know, folks are still extending the effort and making the contributions is so awesome. And I'm grateful for that every day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So thinking about some of the things that you have done on behalf of SRF, I know that you have spoken at galas. I know that you have written blogs and just informative information for parents, been a part of conversations with scientists. What has been the most rewarding thing for you as an SRF involvee?
It's, for me, it's, I alluded to it before, but it's all about the friendships. Mm-hmm. And I think in the friendships is the knowing through our struggles, we're not alone. This can, mm-hmm. I find raising a special needs child can be incredibly lonely and isolating. I lost a number of friends, right? Just kind of lost friends, right? Mm-hmm. Who didn't understand or what have you. And that is what it is. But through SRF, have gained friends, have, you know, really built relationships. We've spent several holidays with the Hardings. JR is someone I call when I need someone to talk to. So that's been incredible.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for any other rare disease organization founders, leaders about what you should absolutely do or absolutely not do? What would you do differently? Any advice for any of those? Because I know some people are going to be chiming into this particular episode, Miss Ashley.
So I think the thing that, as I said, I'm most proud of, gratified by, et cetera, that we did was creating this open tent and asking mm-hmm. folks to sort of contribute in the way that was best for them, right? Some people have very different skills, and bringing that panoply of skills to this, to address this problem, I think has been very important. I guess the one thing that I would say, and this is more to newly diagnosed parents who are thinking about, do I found an organization or do I go try to solve this on my own with one biotech or academic or what have you? I'd say, I think there is an incredible, let's leave aside all of the personal gratification and power that comes from the community, which as I said, is like, is a huge, huge thing, right? There's been that.
Right.
But even if you think about it totally from a selfish perspective, and you say, okay, well, I've got a limited amount of resources, a limited amount of time, and I want to cure my kid. A lot of individuals, a lot of parents will, and we had this option, make the choice to fund an individual biotech or to fund an individual researcher, which ultimately is a bet on one scientific modality and a single shot. And before we founded SRF, we had people approach us with that idea. And I don't think they were ill-intended at all, but I think it would have been a really poor decision looking over the last 5 years and the way that science has evolved and all these things. It would have been a really poor decision to pick one of those biotechs and say, we're going to throw all of our resources, or academics, we're going to throw all our resources behind that. Because that single shot is going to be a single shot, right? That one single shot, you put all your resources behind it, it might move 20 to 30% faster than it would if you diversify your approaches. But if you put your resources behind a single shot or even a single researcher, the probability that that person and that modality is going to be successful is really quite low. And you can end in a spot, you know, one, not having a community, and two, not having to show for the effort. So that's the one thing I really warn pretty strongly against.
Yeah. Okay. In the next 5 years, I know you mentioned in 5 years, we would all hope to have a cure for this. Do you see any, like, is there anything that you worry about, a challenge? Like, it's hard to grow as fast as SRF has grown. We have managed it very well, but what do you anticipate and look forward to, and what challenges do you see for us in the next 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, any organization as it scales continues to have challenges. I am super encouraged by the number of people who have stepped in and sort of helped in the way that they can help. And I guess the thing that I would hope would be the spirit of both our mantra, collaboration, transparency, and urgency, and of, you know, stepping in, looking for ways to make a difference. I would hope that spirit would remain.
Mm-hmm. I always fear that people are going to join this community and say, oh, they've got it together. Yeah. They don't need me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not the case.
We need you. We need every person.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And you said it earlier too, everybody has different skills. Some develop a point in case this, what I'm doing right now, this is very new, and I had never dreamed of doing anything like a podcast before, but it's really not that hard. And it's very fun, I should say. But I would encourage anybody who is thinking that SRF has it together. Yes, we do. But if you can imagine the amount of work that the core of us are doing right now, just imagine how much better we can be with so many more new families coming on as quickly as they are. Put your hand in, put your hand up, and let's continue to work together, because we can only increase this progress and quicken that path to success and a cure.
Absolutely. Very well said.
Okay. So now let's switch from SRF and professional livelihoods and jump to what it's like to be Tony's mom. So you guys recently moved. We've heard from Mike in his podcast about that a lot. Does Tony have a routine yet, or is that still being developed in your new place?
Not yet. We're a week in. We're a week in, and I think folks will understand the transition has been challenging. I almost canceled this podcast because we had a really tough day a couple of days ago, and I was like, how am I going to get more? No, I mean, it happens. I do think, I mean, we chose this home because we think it will be a really good place for him. You know, we used to live on quite a busy street, and we lived in sort of constant fear of elopement onto the street. And we have a really good fence around, and there's plenty of place to play within where we are now. So I'm very hopeful We spent a lot of time talking to the school. We've, as you can imagine, we've done a lot of things in anticipation of the move, and I'm hopeful that as we settle in, we'll really figure it out here. We're going to Adams Camp next week in Colorado, which is a special needs camp, which also has a sibling camp. So
update
the community on how that goes after we do it, but we're doing that next week.
Yeah.
So that'll be a good thing. And then he'll start ESY the week after that. So hopefully get a little more into a routine.
Good. When does his new school year start? Sometime in August?
Yeah, toward the end of August.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to be thinking about you because the summers are always difficult. I know how it is so hard to piecemeal together what the structure can look like during the summertime when you don't have the consistency of a school day throughout the week.
Yeah.
And throwing a move into that also, I cannot imagine. I mean, I guess it's better than doing it in the school year, but kudos to you.
Hopefully we don't move again for a long time.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Tell me about your favorite thing about Tony.
There are a lot of things. I think.
Favorite couple of things.
Yeah. I think it is just the purity with which he can express when he's in the right mood, you know, his heart. Right. His, you know, he just grabs you and looks you in the eye and says, I love you. Like, you know, I love you so much. Or, you know, he has a hard day, has a hard moment, and, you know, it doesn't always happen, but on the back part of it, there's like a pat on the arm that's like, occasionally he'll say, you know, thank you for taking care of me.
Oh,
you know, and
that's so sweet.
And I just, you know, he's got so many challenges and he still brings that love to life and also keeps going, you know, gets up, you know, he has a really hard time and then he gets up and, you know, tries again the next day.
Yeah. What would you say is your hardest day-to-day struggle?
He can have very challenging behaviors, and when he takes them out on his brother, that's the worst.
Yeah. That's the worst. Yeah. John's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's an unfair occurrence.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you fear long term?
Yeah. So Tony's 9 and a half. We're sort of starting to approach puberty, which has two really big fears in my mind. One is more extreme behaviors. You know, I actually can't really physically manage him anymore. You know, he's comes to
he's pretty big.
When he's really upset, he's really upset. And so that's going to be a bigger problem. And also, you know, we know from the community a lot of kids will have drop seizures, and he's not really had drop seizures yet. So that's another fear that I have for the crop call at next 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. If Lauren has, well, there's been a couple of people who've shared that they have seen puberty emerge a little bit later with our kiddos. So hopefully that holds for Tony and gives you some extra time to prepare for it.
If the science for the extra years to keep working on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and maybe this new environment change for him will bring a sense of calming to his daily routines too. Yeah. I know the easiest way for us to calm Nathan down if he's upset is to bring him outside and let him look at a lawnmower. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's not always feasible. Mm-hmm. But we will always have to have one of those things. Okay. What do you do for yourself to give yourself a break?
It's back to what I was saying before. Like, walks in nature is a big thing for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if we have to schedule
yes.
them.
Yeah, they're usually scheduled. But that's okay. Yep.
And what about Tony's biggest success in the last year? What are you most proud of for him?
He's almost potty trained. That's a big deal.
Hey,
really? That's cool on that. He had some capability around it, and then he kind of became a behavior, and so we fell back for a while. So that is a big life freeing yes. activity for us. But the other thing I'd say is that it's really hard to leave Palo Alto because he had kind of a pretty good year in school, where he was in the gen ed classroom up to half the time. He was doing, he's made some progress with his reading and his math, and so was able to sort of participate with the kids there. And I'm hopeful he can continue to do that. Clearly, here, but it's a new school district and they don't know him. And
right.
But I'm hopeful right. on that front.
Yeah. Well, you'll get to know him quickly. Yeah. That's a guarantee. Okay. And one piece of advice for any SYNGAP family about how to live a happy life with SYNGAP.
I think for me, it's been about loving what is, trying not to think too much about the future, because the reality is we don't know what the future will bring. I do try to let myself grieve when I need to grieve the gaps between my own expectations of, which I didn't really know I even had, right? My expectations of raising a child. But also, and also loving Tony as he is and where he is. If he is really excited, right now he's really excited about playing Nintendo with Mario. And like, if I sit on the couch with him and watch him play Mario Nintendo for like 50, he loves that. And like, I can sit there and kind of pat him on the knee or hold his hand while he's doing that. And like, he's smiling at me. He's so happy about it. Like, is it what I wish my kid was? Sure, no. But like, that's where he is now and he's happy. And so like, I'm trying to let myself, be happy with that. I watch the way, I actually feel like John teaches me so many lessons in this way. Like, John just beets him where he is. Sometimes Tony's upset and Tony goes to the other room. But a lot of the time, like, I went upstairs and this morning and they're sitting on the bed together and he's like, John was like wanting Tony to read to him. And say, Tony, read this to me. And Tony was kind of reading and kind of making up words, but like, they were connecting. And that, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, is connecting and loving.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, I know how very busy you are and how much you're dealing with right now in your life. So thank you for your time and for your knowledge and inspiration. You are somebody who I will always look up to. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ashley. Thank you for doing this. And thank you for doing something that was outside of your comfort zone and working like a pro the whole time you're doing it.
Fake it till you make it. All right, everybody. Thanks for chiming in. We'll talk to you soon. Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and like us wherever you're listening. For more information about today's guest and SYNGAP1, please check out our show notes. Your suggestions are always welcome. Please email us at ed@curesyngap1.org.